morning, rise into the street. Light me up that cigarette, and I'll strap shoes on my feet. Got to find a reason, reason things went wrong. Got to find a reason why my money's all gone. I got a Dalmatian, I can still get high. I can play the guitar like on.
Okay, well, I couldn't figure out where the music was, so we just let it play. I hoped it wouldn't run for an hour and a half. Hey, this is Mike Vandervoort. It is May 15th. I'm co-hosting Drive Through HR today from the Grand Hyatt in San Antonio, Texas, where it's supposed to be sunny and warm, and it's actually cold and rainy with thunderstorms. So, kind of a weird place. I'm at the Workplace Strategies 2015 conference put on by Ogletree Deacons, and it's been pretty cool. We have a great guest, longtime friend, mentor of mine, China Gorman. Welcome back to Drive Through HR. How are you?
I'm great, and I'm just trying to remember when was the last time I was on Drive Through HR, and I think it's been a couple of years. So I'm happy to be back.
Well, great. Yeah, I'm thrilled to be the lucky host in the rotation who caught you. I always like catching up with you, and I told you in the pre-show, I have no idea where William is. He's probably like in Australia or something, and then Nisha has family cooking, and Crystal Miller and a bunch of our other friends in the social media realm are at Social HR Camp today in Omaha, and I haven't had a chance to catch much of the Twitter stream, but it looks like it's very interesting. And I saw that Dwayne Lay just did Ignite HR and killed that presentation. So it sounds like they're having a blast out there. China, you and I talked a few weeks back, and you've had a little bit of a change. You were Great Place to Work Institute, and I think you've got something new going on. Why don't you tell us what's up with China, and then we'll talk about our special program topic.
Yeah, sure. So I think if anybody's a regular listener, that I actually think the last time I was on was right after I started my job as CEO of Great Place to Work Institute. And most people know them as the analyst and research firm behind the Fortune 100 Best Companies to Work for in America list that gets published every year. But what most people don't know is that it's a truly global company, and Great Place to Work Institute publishes 102 of those kinds of lists in about 51 countries around the world. And so it's a pretty massive organization. I was the CEO of both the global franchise headquarters, because all of the global locations are independent franchises licensed to use the model, the methodology, the intellectual property and stuff, and the U.S. franchise. And it was a family-owned, founder-controlled business that was beginning to really grow and needed, you know, to turn itself into a business and to raise its branding and its profile and around the world, and with an ultimate goal for the, you know, the majority shareholder to have some options. And so I had a fabulous team, and we rolled our sleeves up and got to work. And darn if we didn't turn that business around in about 18 months and enable the owner to sell off the business. And so my team and I did such a great job that we worked ourselves out of our job. But it was, you know, while it was a huge success for the business, it meant, you know, when we sold off what we did was we sold off the global business, which is the largest part of the business, to a group of private investors. And so we turned the business over to them at the end of March. And so I'm staying on as an advisor to the board and, you know, part-time ambassador kind of person. But that leaves me free now on a full-time basis to think about joining another organization that in our space that wants to turn around and boom their growth. And so in the meantime, as I look for that great opportunity, I've gone back to my independent consultancy, and I'm doing some analyst work, some branding and marketing support for some really cool brands in our space, and some writing and re-engaging with advisory board work. So I was just in San Francisco for the last 2 days at an analyst day event for a very cool startup. Actually, it's not a startup anymore because they're so successful, but a company called GuideSpark, which is bringing a whole new way to communicate business issues, and they're starting with benefits and HR issues via a really phenomenal video platform. And so it was really interesting to spend a day with their leadership team and a group of really smart analysts, John Sumser, Mark Stelzner, Michael Moon, I'm missing people, but to, you know, there were eight of us in the leadership team of GuideSpark, and it really turned into more of sort of a workshop, a strategy workshop. So it was really, it was quite fun, and I love attending Analyst Days because you get the insight giddy on what some of the coolest, you know, rapidly growing companies in our space are doing.
It's always. I don't attend many analyst stuff, but anytime you can get a peek behind the scenes ahead of time, there's just something really fun about it to kind of be able to see it before it really hits the market. Who is the CEO there at GuideSpark? I think
Keith,
I did an interview
Keith,
with him.
Yeah, Keith like, Kitani. Keith Kitani,
yeah, Keith
is the founder and CEO. Joe LaRocque and there was another founder. They were the founders. It's about 5 years old. They've got over 500 customers. They're doing some really interesting, you know, really groundbreaking things in terms of driving consumable information to employees that results in sort of a call to action that they actually follow through on. And their first iteration, it's really about benefits communication, which is, you know, on top of mind, particularly these days with the ACA and all the changes that are coming to plan. So open enrollment, you know, you think about what a challenge it is to communicate with every single employee in a way that gets them the information they need to make the decisions that are so impactful for them and their families. And, you know, we all know emails aren't opened, much less read, brochures aren't read, you know, so how do we get this critical information to our employees? And it kind of looks like GuideSpark has sort of broken that code. And then you think about, well, open enrollment. Well, what about other kinds of benefits? What about, you know, what about the 401k plan communications? What about, and then you think, well, what about talent acquisition applications? And then you think,
right,
you know, so it just sort of rolls and rolls and rolls. And so it was fun to hear sort of their startup story and their, you know, the hockey stick growth, oh my gosh, that they're experiencing over the last couple of years, and meet their fabulous experience leadership team. You could say this, you know, about lots and lots of companies in our space, but it's really fun to get up close and personal with one that's, you know, struggled through the upstart days and the disrupting days and are now really finding their footing and just, you know, the business is booming. It's fun to hear those stories.
Yeah, I think what happened with that is Keith, they were trying to do some social media promotion or something, you know, a year or so ago, maybe you're not sure, national or something, and Keith made himself available, like, you know, and I did an interview, you know, phone interview, I was going to write a blog, and I actually never really figured out how to make the blog work, so I don't know that I published it, but he and I, and I don't remember all the details, but the solution that they had was fascinating to me at the time because I was at Publix, right? And we didn't buy it, but I got into a whole side discussion with him about, like, you know, remote locations and 1,100 stores and I believe they had like a mobile solution for video.
Powerful
stuff.
Yeah, the data is pretty compelling that for the majority, you know, more adults have smartphones than not. And that the majority of the use of smartphones is mobile and video.
So if that's the case,
why wouldn't you leverage mobile and video?
Exactly. So like in my world, right, you know, in labor relations, you could have videos that would go to your managers at remote locations that they could get on their phones, which are largely, you know, company provided or at least company partly company paid for. the same thing if you needed rapid communication on, you know, on certain issues related to, you know, employee relations stuff, you could push that out. That was what I was really fascinated by. I never really followed up with them on that, but we had a long, you know, like I said, tangential discussion, and it was quite interesting to me. And then anyway, that wasn't what the blog was supposed to be about, so I never printed that. But I'm aware of them, and I agree they had some pretty cool stuff going on, and it's been a year since I looked at it, so I can only imagine it's better. However, this show is not about Guy Clark, nor about analysts, although they're all fascinating, and we could probably do a couple of shows on that stuff. The show is actually about a really cool opportunity that you and I believe Jerry Crispin have put together. And so I know you've done a couple trips before. Why don't you tell us what this really cool thing you guys have cooking is?
Sure. And thanks for the opportunity to sort of publicize this from the Drive-Thru HR platform.
Absolutely.
So Jerry got the ball rolling and brought me in about 3 weeks ago. And so, you know, the sort of loosening of restrictions between Cuba and the United States means that there will be more business done probably in the near future between Cuba and the United States. And it's not a too distant thought that there may be U.S.-based organizations able now legitimately to have locations in Cuba to do business in. And so that brings up a whole set of issues for HR people around the planning and the preparation and of, you know, opening operations there, but also from a talent perspective, what's the reality of the state of talent in Cuba? We know it's a desperately stressed economy. We know the political ramifications of the decision to, you know, loosen the restrictions is huge. So what do HR people really need to know about the state of the state as it relates to talent in Cuba? And how do they start to think about, well, should we have employees in Cuba? And so Jerry's been sort of, that's been rolling around in Jerry's very fertile brain for a while. And so a little bit of backstory. When I was the chief operating officer and interim CEO at SHRM, I led two delegations of senior HR professionals, 1 year to India and 1 year to China. Phenomenal learning experiences, both professionally and culturally. We talked to CEOs, we talked to HR leaders, we talked to academics, we talked to students, and then we did all kinds of wonderful, you know, sort of cultural things. And those, I'm not sure that SHRM does those delegation trips anymore, but the logistics and the framework and all the details were handled by this fabulous organization up in the Pacific Northwest called People to People Ambassadors. And Jerry connected with People to People a couple of months ago and said, so how many people would it take for us to put together a learning delegation, a professional HR delegation to Cuba, and he got the ball rolling with them. And so now we're a done deal. We leave from Miami on November 13th and return on the 21st. We have today 14 people signed up to attend. We have spots for 25, so without really any marketing and just sort of word of mouth, we're more than half filled for what will be, I think, an extraordinary experience and sort of a first-in experience for HR people in Cuba.
Yeah, so what were those dates again? Because I'm trying to tweet it out.
November
13th. I'm still not very good at tweeting and talking, believe it or not. 21st to the 26th?
The 13th. Through the 21st, we leave Miami on the 13th, and we'll return to Miami on the 21st. And the I will tell you from experience traveling with People to People that when they say the accommodations and the logistics are first class, they are truly first class. And they take, you know, we are met by a guide who stays with us for the entire time, who does translations as well as the cultural pieces, as well as taking care of all the logistics, the travel, you know, in coaches is first class, the hotels, the food, everything is really first class. And so when you think about, you know, a trip of this length, the cost is $4,899. You couldn't go to Cuba for $4,899, stay first class, and do the kinds of things and have the kind of experience that the experiences that we're going to have. And so, from a travel perspective, it's a huge deal. But then when you add on the professional and cultural value, you know, this is kind of the deal of the century, I think, if you have any level of interest in Cuba.
Cool. So let me do a quick reset. It's quarter past, and then I got a couple questions.
Sure.
So it's May 15th, and it's 1:15, and so there's all kinds of 15s in there, whatever that means for those people who like symbolism and time. And our guest today is China Gorman. I'm Mike Vandervoort, and China has joined us to talk about a really exciting and unique opportunity that was put together by Jerry Crispin, who many of us know is kind of one of the grand poobahs of recruiting, been around the industry for a long time, classifies himself as a lifetime student, and just loves to do this kind of learning and traveling. And so, China, the trip is to Cuba in November, as you just told us. But you mentioned that you had done these before. I had talked to you about this because I'm fascinated by these kind of trips. I've never done one.
Yeah.
I'd love to go to Cuba. I mentioned it to my wife, and I think I have more discussion before I sign up. But if I really push her, she'll let me go. I should not blame her, but she was pointing out to me that we're buying a condo in Atlanta and we're getting road repair done, and you know we're spending a lot of money. And five grand is probably a cheap trip for an experience like this. But anyway.
It's a lot of money.
You went with Sherm, right? You went.
Yeah.
I believe the trips to China and India when you were actually still with the CEO at Sherm, right?
Yes. And because the travel was so much further, those trips were, I think, closer to $6,000
the airfare and the time, right? I guess my first question is, like, on those trips, what you know, the people who went, you know, what did you learn? I mean, obviously it was a combination of learning and fun, but, you know, how does it work? What do you get out of it?
Well, I you know, if you've been on any, you know, international tour kind of trip, you know, where you buy a package thing and it's the luck of the draw on the guide and the bus driver and who else is, you know, on the tour bus with you. We did a tour through Italy, our first trip to Italy, and it was fabulous, but the guide is a really important thing, and if you got a bad guide, you could see how it would be a horrible vacation. And the bus driver is actually one of the most important factors. do they know where they're going, and, you know, are you going to be nauseous because of the way they drive or not? And then the rest of the people, you know, you're traveling for 10 days with 25 people. And so for me on these HR delegate trips, that's one of the most amazing pieces of value is that, you know, 25, when we went to China, I think we had about 50 people. When we went to India, I think we had right around 25. The China trip was amazing, you know, for all kinds of reasons, but it was hard to get to know 50 people because we were split between two buses and, you know, that kind of thing. One busload of people is a great amount of people because you really get to know the people that you're traveling with. And so I can tell you, the people that we have signed up now are people that you would want to get to know. And I'm not going to name names, even though they would be okay with it. But we've got very senior HR people. We've got a couple of really interesting media people. We've got a couple of bloggers that everybody would know. Our focus is really not going to be on the broad HR. This is Jerry, you know, this is Jerry Crispin after all. It's really going to be on talent. So how do people in Cuba enter the workforce? And what's the infrastructure for training and education for young people to join the workforce? That'll be something interesting to really understand. So it's, you know, how do you find work in that society and that culture? So the planned economy in Cuba, how does that impact workforce planning and workforce workforce development? And so now, given the, you know, the easing of some of the restrictions with the U.S., what are they going to be doing to plan for, you know, an influx of, hopefully or maybe, of U.S. economic investment by way of, you know, the expansion of U.S. businesses into Cuba if the restriction lessening is, you know, strong enough to support that. So we're not going to so much have a, you know, a huge, you know, HR generalist focus. It really is going to be on talent. But, you know, that's the most important thing that every HR leader everywhere in the world is focusing on now, is how do we get the right talent? How do we attract them to our organization and culture? How do we retain them? And then how do we develop them so that we can deploy them when and as and where we need them? And so those, that's really kind of the focus that we're going to have. And we'll meet with people. The people will help us set these meetings up. That's what they do. And we will work amongst our own connections to see who can help us with other kinds of meetings. But it's our, of course, we'll be meeting with government leaders. That's a given in a planned economy. And then academics, we hope. We'd love to meet with some students. And then we'd love to meet with business leaders, HR or otherwise, to really understand the business culture inside Cuba today and how do they see that shifting as their economic relationship with the U.S. changes.
Right. I honestly have no idea what you would expect to see in Cuba, right? But it doesn't seem to me that it's like a complete stretch of the imagination to think that, you know, there's no, that, you know, maybe not none, but there's very little in the way of, you know, sophisticated ATSs, and there's very little in the way of social media and branding and, you know, all the things that we spend so much time talking about. So I think you probably in India and China, I think there's probably varying degrees of that sort of stuff. Think you're going to see? What do you think you're going to see when you get there? Do you think it's going to be like a time warp, or do you think you're going to see very clever sort of adaptations based upon the circumstances and that have existed in that country sort of because of the political situation that we've had with them for so long?
Yeah. Well, I think it's going to be both, Michael. I think I have some friends who've been to Cuba most recently, and they say it's like stepping back – visually, it's like stepping back into the 50s. The cars are, from the late 50s, right? And sort of that's what all, when you Google images of Cuba, that's what you see, right? Are the cars from 1957 to 1950. So visually, I think it will feel a little bit like stepping back into a time warp. And I think, you know, there are businesses there. There are organizations there that make stuff and deliver stuff, and so there has to be, you know, some kind of systems for managing people. Now, one of the things that I do know is, and most people don't really understand this, there is a strong tourism industry in Cuba.
Right.
Americans
right.
can't fly from America to Cuba to, you know, spend a week on the beach. But
Canadians, South Central America,
Cuba,
Europeans,
Mexico,
all kinds of us. Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah.
So we know that there is a hospitality business there. And when you think about, you know, staffing and managing talent in a hospitality situation, so there are restaurants, there are housekeepers, there's front of house, there's back of house, you know. So and those you know, arguably, you know, will have, you know, hundreds of employees. So it would surprise me if the systems were all still paper based. They might be, but it'd be interesting to really check that out. So I think we're going to see, you know, human beings are clever. And human beings, I think, even, you know, in a planned economy kind of political system, people want to be smart. They want to do better. They want to improve. And so I think it'll be interesting to see, you know, the kinds of systems, the kind of programs, the kinds of approaches they have, because, you know, talent is talent. And,
right.
You know, people want to be developed. People want to, you know, like the people that they work with. They want to be proud of the work that they do. And so even if you're in a, you know, a planned economy, people still want all of that. So how do they do that? I'm going to be really interested in asking those questions and seeing the reality of what that's like. We saw a little bit of that in China, although China had was much freer from an economic perspective on the global stage
right.
than Cuba is now. But still, the government set wages, right? And
right.
The government ran the unions.
Right, right. It's a,
how,
it's very,
you know,
yeah.
Whoa,
it's a
wow,
very,
just,
it's a very
yeah.
directed system from a top,
yeah, yeah.
the top of the government
and yet,
down kind of. Oh.
And yet they invested in technology. They had, you know,
mm-hmm.
for them some of the latest HRIS systems, and
mm-hmm.
so it'll really be interesting. I really don't have a sense specifically of what we're going to see, but I think it's going to be a combination of time warp and ingenuity.
Are you concerned at all? I mean, because the relationship has, you know, it's a rather abrupt change, actually, after so many years. President Obama
yeah.
kind of broke the wall, which is, I think, very cool. You know, I'm sure there are other people who would take strong exception to that. But do you expect to have kind of a shelter? I don't know. This isn't exactly the right way to say this, probably. Do you expect to have like a shelter trip? Do you think you'll be, you know, shepherded around by the government? Or do you expect it to be pretty open? Or do you not really know what to expect in that regard?
I don't know what to expect. But if I compare and contrast to the China trip, we had government officials, not officially on our trip, but showing up and attaching themselves to us when we did anything as a group. And when we, you know, specifically when I gave a talk, either at a business or at an academic institution, there were always, you know, a couple of people in the audience that, you know, who are these people? Well, they were party officials. And so my guess is, because the only way still Americans can travel from the U.S. to Cuba is for learning, so student kind of opportunities, you know, I expect we'll probably see party officials from time to time, but
yep.
mostly I expect that our guide, who will be assigned to us for the entire trip, you know, is in the tourism industry, but you know, works for the government. So
as a tool role,
know,
double agent
yeah,
with well
yeah.
intended purposes. Awesome.
Exactly.
We're down, believe
exactly.
it or not, we're down to 1:40.
Oh my gosh.
So I know the time has.
So
I mean, it's amazing. So what? Here, this is just my quick take, right, on all this. I think it would be so amazing to be, you know, first boots on the ground, so to speak, you know, after so
yeah.
so soon after this relationship has changed. So that's what is so interesting to me. So I, you know, whether I make it or not, I'll be watching very closely. Where do people go, China, if they want to jump on and find out more about this? Is there a link? Do they contact you or Jerry? How does that work?
They can contact me or Jerry. I published a post about it on my website, chinagorman.com.
And I tweeted that out here, so that link is up on Twitter.
Thanks. They can email me, china@chinagorman.com. I'll send them all the forms and all the information. this has gained speed so quickly that the page at People to People isn't even up yet, and it probably won't be up for another couple of weeks, and it certainly seems possible to me that we'll be full before the page before the page goes up.
We don't need a website. We sold out with word of mouth. So
yeah,
okay, cool.
Exactly. But that, but what
so,
that means is there's big demand, and we might do another one early next year.
Awesome. We have 17 seconds. Thanks so much for coming on the show. I hope that I get
my
to
pleasure.
Go. If there's any crazy company out there that wants a host with a blog and a radio show to sponsor, sign me up. I'm your guy. China, I'll talk to you soon. Thanks for being
looking
on Drive Through. I'm going to roll out with some kind of music here in just a second. See you soon.
Thanks, Mike.